Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively out here. And my favorite place, this is the originator of Baltimore Positive. We did our first ever crab cake tour here. We did our first ever podcast here. We're at State Fair in Catonsville. Life is great in the 21228, and made even better because we're right off the UMBC campus. I got workers here at State Fair wearing UMBC gear. I've seen UMBC parties here and all that. But other than having Freeman Hrabowski, the good doctor, here a couple years ago before he retired, went off in the sunset. Today we've got political science, and I've waited years to have Dr. Sunil Dasgupta on. He is a political science analyst, but he has a podcast that I am a neighbor to in Ocean City at Mako every summer that's called I Hate Politics. And I thought, you know, I got to have this guy on. And, like, you and I are working hard at the beach, and I'm getting all these guests and senators, congresspeople, electeds are coming by and whatnot. And I thought, I'm going to get you. I told you when I had you on, I said, I do my show over right off UMBC. You're a professor there. And I get you on, and you're like, well, I sort of work remotely. And I thought I was just calling you from, like, a block away to come over here. But we're all remote at this point, doctor, aren't we?
Well, it's not just remote, right? So, actually, UMBC has a campus on at the Universities of Shady Grove, which is in Montgomery County. In fact, that the Universities of Shady Grove campus is a multi-institutional campus where, you know, University of Maryland is there, and Towson is there, and UMBC is there, Salisbury is there. And so different public institutions in Maryland do offer programs there. And I run the political science program for UMBC there. So it's not that I'm here.
So you're Montgomery County based, even though it says UMBC.
Yes. So, you know, if you look at it, Montgomery County, the most populous county in Maryland, does not have its own four-year institution. And this is the political solution they came up with in order to give Montgomery County its four-year institution. Now, we have a great community college.
I had never thought about that,
yeah,
right?
Well, so we have a great community college called Montgomery College that is 2 years. And then where do kids go after that? So then they go to USG, Universities of Shady Grove, where UMBC has a program.
I hadn't really thought about that because College Park sort of eats up that whole top side of the Beltway, right? It was there before the Beltway was there, right?
Yeah.
But then I think about, like, Loyola, Johns Hopkins, Coppin, Morgan, black institutions here. D.C. probably ate all that up with Howard and GW and Georgetown, right? So, like, putting a big college in Upper Marlboro or putting a big college in Gaithersburg, those were all communities that kind of came later, and you're like, well, College Park's right over there, right? So College Park becomes this big banana. But I hadn't thought about that, like, a whole lot. That they're, even Northern Virginia has George Mason, has other schools.
Right.
Up here we got Towson. Yeah, PG and Montgomery County. I can't call it PG. Prince George's. I don't want anybody mad at me. But they don't have anything other than Maryland, right?
In part because the University of Maryland is so close to Montgomery, you're right. They, you know, gather up all the students.
That is there. Montgomery County's college, right?
Right. In practical terms. But UMBC gets a ton of students from Montgomery County, right? That's, I think, the part that we are missing. That, you know, there is a lot. Montgomery County is 1.1 million people. That's fully one-sixth of Maryland.
See, I think of Baltimore County as being huge when I've looked up, you know, it's a top 90 population in the country, like 900,000 or whatever it is. And I'm thinking, it's not even the biggest in the state, right?
No, it's not. And, you know, the school district in Montgomery County is, I think, 14th largest in the nation. It's a huge school district, even though, you know, enrollments are now going to drop off because of the demographic cliff that, you know, the is nationwide.
Well, your podcast is called I Hate Politics, which when I go to Mako, he's got a big sign. He's got a set like this. Not like here at State Fair where just, Tammy's bringing me coffee and seafood benedicts over here. But for your podcast, I didn't know that it wasn't a Catonsville or UMBC, but it's very Montgomery County centric, right? And I've gotten to know your county executive down there, and he comes from an education background. unique individual, Mark. You know, just in a big way, we're talking baseball, talking rock and roll. I kind of talk to anything. But Montgomery County, to me, to have an elected like him as county executive, I'm like, that's an interesting county. And every time I talk to him, it doesn't come across in the same way as when I talk Anne Arundel County, Harford County, Baltimore County, anything that's Baltimore-centric. Montgomery County is an interesting beast, right?
Yeah, Montgomery County is a very interesting beast. I mean, don't forget, when Hogan won first time, in part because Montgomery County voted for Hogan. So it's not like, you know, it's fully it's a Democratic stronghold, no doubt, right? And it is, you know, incredible. It takes a lot of fortitude. Mark Elrich won very narrowly now 2 times. By 32
but also,
votes
but
last
also the
time.
Money that gets spent against him, it becomes its own little ecosystem of everything that's wrong and still yet right in America, that someone could spend millions of dollars to unseat someone and someone that just says, I'm not going to take money, can win. That almost sounds like it's in a movie somewhere, not in a county with a million people.
Right. And the interesting part about that is, and it's, I think, applies to a lot of Maryland, is that the real election is not the general election. It's not against Republicans.
Sure.
It's not against Republicans, right? It is within the party. So do we know as much about primaries as we know about general elections? How many people actually vote in the primaries? I mean, a really small number relative.
Not enough as it pertains to
less than 20%
electing
Nestor.
Mayors and electing county executives.
Yeah, I mean,
just here in Maryland, right?
Right, right. Most people vote for the president, and then they'll vote for the governor, maybe a couple of other positions, congressman, you know, senator, and then they just leave the rest of the ballot out because that's called a, you know, down ballot drop off. It's just a crazy situation.
Well, that's what I was hoping to take advantage of as a mayoral candidate in 2020. When when I put this together to run for office, I started looking for numbers, and I'm like, Sheila Dixon's going to be the mayor again by getting about 70,000 votes in a primary, right? Because she can't lose the general. Winning the primary is everything, right? And I'm like, how many votes is it going to take? And the amazing part for me is, and I own an FCC license, I have... In 27 years, I think I've taken less than a couple of $1,000 in political money for ads.
Yeah.
Stephen L. Miles, who, you know, the famous attorney, I think he gave me $1,000. He was running for a state's attorney 20 years ago. Gave me $1,000 to run some ads.
Uh-huh.
All of the ecosystem of media, BAL, Jay-Z, Fox, all of them
right. Live
on local and national political money, especially in political season, right?
I agree.
So it's astonishing to me with all the money that does get spent and all of these politicians that come around now, and I've had Nick Stewart on, I've had Julian Jones just here in Baltimore County, I had Pat Young across the street a couple weeks ago, I had Izzy Patoko on up in, they're all running for county executive.
Right.
They're all out wanting money, raise money, raise money, raise money to win a primary in Baltimore County, right? And that all this money that gets spent, they still can't get people to even, and Trump's going to screw all this up by the mail-in voting is going to go away because he's a criminal. And so there's going to be even less people voting the next time around. So as mad as we get at politics, and I hate politics, and Trump wakes me up this morning, and what are we going to do for the Jamaican people in the storm? At the end of the day, the activation of politics in this country is against the world and how much we control the world. Your vote in America is among the most valuable things in the world.
That is correct.
Right? Your passport and your vote in America, and it is lost on 80% of our population, right?
You know, literally. I like to say America's biggest weapon in the last 70 years is not the atomic bomb or the drones or the fancy fighter jets, but the green card. The green card is the most potent weapon that the United States has had in the last 70 years. Because when you issue that, what you're doing is you're telling somebody, right? You go to a Vietnam, right? And then you go, if you help us, we'll give you a green card, and we'll give you a green card to bring your family over, right? And that changes the entire life of that family. Right? That's an amazingly incredible thing to have. I want to say this. You know, I don't hate politics. The name comes from all the stuff. You said you ran in 2020.
I didn't run. I was setting up to run, and I didn't run. But everything everybody said to me was, you got to go out and get money from people. Give money. And then give it to WJZ and give it to the Baltimore Sun. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm not doing that. That's silly.
Hold on. I actually ran in 2020.
You ran for school board, right?
I ran for school board in 2020. And so I got over 205,000 votes. That's, you know, obviously a million people counting, you know, almost 700,000 voters. I got 200,000 votes. That's just a crazy, I raised $43,000 for his inky dinky school board campaign. You know, so the thing, I learned a lot, and that was the COVID year. So you know where I spent all that money? Because I couldn't knock on doors.
Online.
I spent it, I gave it to Mark Zuckerberg. I spent $40,000 on Facebook.
Enriching Facebook.
Enriching right. Facebook.
And trying to win a county seat in a place that's a billion miles from Facebook's. So that would be my point is like, where that's the problem in politics, and I learned this when I went up to Canada. I went up to see Pearl Jam about 4 years ago. And I'm driving through Quebec, and I'm driving through Ottawa, and I drove through Montreal. Mm-hmm. And everywhere I went, there were, like we have in downtown Baltimore, that would have the Oriole signs or the Artscape signs. They were literally on the streets. There would be a picture. Sunil Dasgupta running for county. So all of their political ads were on street signs, but there's no advertising, and there's no money taken in. In Canada, there was equal placement everywhere of these people's signs, and they were running for town council. They were local, very hyper local elections. And I'm like, I Googled it a little bit to try to understand. I don't fully. I'm not Canadian, right? But how that is so much different than every politician I've ever met who's trying to get the biggest check from the biggest place to buy the biggest media to buy votes that still don't really translate because the money doesn't really buy the election always.
Yes.
Doesn't so Elon Musk.
Yeah, no, I exactly. That's what I'm saying. Is that money is important but not determinative, right? It doesn't determine elections. So I lost, by the way. I raised 300% more than my opponent, but I lost, right? Mark Eldridge, we were just talking about him, right, as county executive in Montgomery County, he didn't have as much money as his opponent, and he won. He won narrowly. I mean, you know, 32 votes, 72 votes. It's like a, that's like a, you know, winning by a hair, right? I mean, just that's amazing. And so money is important. That one of the things I try to teach my students is that money is important, but we can't think of money alone. There are several other things we want to understand about politics, and one of them is organizing. Right. Now, think about this. If you had... I mean, we have a pothole problem everywhere, right? In every winter, there's like potholes everywhere, and they need to be fixed. And so imagine the pothole manager of Baltimore County. He or she has to determine which pothole to fix first, right? There's got to be some logic to it. Now, what's going to be the logic? How is this person going to
figure out? Well, the road that's the most used, the deepest hole, right?
But also, maybe the richest part of town, also.
Of course.
Also, who is, you know, maybe there's a well-organized, not-so-rich community that calls a lot.
The
squeaky wheel.
Sure.
So there are several logics by which we determine, right, how to fix potholes. And the pothole manager of wherever needs to
And I hope pothole management's not corrupt.
Well, corrupt
is we fix the rich people first anyway, and we never fix the poor
people.
That's corrupt.
Well, so then it raises the question of what is political power? And actually, it raises the question of what is politics? What is politics?
It's who you know.
It's who you know. Well, part of it is, but what is politics? Why are some things political and other things not political? So this is a good example. So if you're going to buy a gas stove today, right, if you want a gas stove in your house, is that a political decision or is that a non-political decision?
Well, it might be based on gas versus electric, so
correct.
I guess it
so
is, or whether you're burning clean coal or not,
that's
right?
That's right. That's, I mean, there's no
clean coal. Or whether you're buying the gas stove from China or whether you're buying it from...
Yeah.
Okay. Murfreesboro, Tennessee, or whatever's now making cold.
Now compare that with buying a dishwasher. Is that political?
Well, you're using water, but you're using less water, theoretically. Dishpan hands, as a guy who did my dishes this morning, I can tell you, this time of year I need some lotion.
Yeah. But if you...
It is political. Am I doing the dishes or my wife doing
it?
That's the ultimate politics right?
Well, hold on. But the dishwasher decision is less political than the gas decision, right? The gas stove decision is much more political because are you choosing gas or are you going to go electric? That's a big political argument in this country. But the dishwasher, there's consensus that it should use less water. And almost every manufacturer you know is actually using less water, trying to use less and less water in their dishwasher. So that's almost an economic decision based on do you want the meal or do you want the Kenmore, right? That's the decision that you have to make. But in a gas stove, you're making much overtly political decision. But why is the gas stove different from the dishwasher? And the difference is that we disagree on the gas stove. On the dishwasher, we have consensus. So that's not political. So politics consists of, politics is a room full of disagreements. There are disagreements that science, money, faith, everything else cannot solve. Politics is this, like, it's like a sewer. I mean, it's just a room full of disagreements, and obviously it's going to be nasty as a consequence because, you know, people are disagreeing.
Well, you either
things.
Have to agree to disagree or disagree disagreeably, but you're rarely going to be swayed on beliefs, faith, and ethics in regard to politics. I mean, I think that's one of the problems with Trump at this point is I'm 10 years into this shit show, and every day I found one person that I can manage, that I have in my phone, that I can text him, who voted for Trump in 16, who didn't in 20, and never intended to the next time around, right? So, and I know lots of people that voted for Trump. They voted for him three times, not one. Like, so for me, and Will for, even though it's unlawful, even though the White House. So to your, I guess this is a larger point of something Orwellian, is to say, or not even that, Sagan wrote about this, people won't change their minds.
Yes, we know that, right?
The Epstein files, like if you're in on Trump, wouldn't matter what pictures or videos, like Ronald Reagan this week, he'll just say it's fake. And if you're involved in the cult, if you're involved in the belief, if your belief is so strong that man is Christian, that man is believable, that man is always honest and everybody's out to get him, I live a life in that, having grown up in Archie Bunker's Dundalk
right.
in the 70s. I mean,
right.
80% of the people I went to high school with are trumped up for life. There, he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue because that's how far in they are. And that's been well worn as he runs the country. I think that's the hardest part of modern politics is it's unbendable. You can't shape someone's opinion, even with facts, even with evidence. It's beyond that.
The great German physicist actually said that old ideas don't change people's minds. Old people just die away. That's what he said, Max Planck. But you know, we know in the humanities, right? And this is really, really the crux of the issue right now. Is that we have focused our education system so much on science, technology, et cetera, and the idea of science in the last 40 years now, right? That we have forgotten the humanities and the social sciences and what they bring to the table. If you study the humanities is a really, really hard thing to do. And we make, you know, fun of art history majors and all of that. But humanities recognizes, for instance, that you don't change minds. That all you can do, the best you can do, is to rearrange desires. The best you can do is rearrange what people want, but you do not change minds. And I, you know, so now that SNAP benefits are going, now that, you know, Medicaid's, you know, really, you know, health insurance is going to balloon, I think people will change their minds because it's going to affect their actual lives. They're going to recognize that governing...
That is the pendulum.
That is the pendulum. It's going to happen. But what I want to say is that I think the bigger problem, the reason we have January 6th, the reason we have Trumpism in the first place is because we have neglected this entire knowledge of humans called humanities, social sciences. And, you know, science has been wonderful. The vaccine is wonderful. The antibiotic is wonderful.
I'm getting on a plane and flying off.
Is wonderful. The pill is wonderful. It allowed...
The internet's wonderful. This camera's wonderful. This computer, I mean...
Exactly.
It's insane.
We haven't
talked AI yet, and I got to do that with
you, Doc. Nobody's dogging technology or science. But the fact is that you cannot ignore. You cannot ignore the human experience, right?
Well, that's psychology. We only perceive it as humans. And what we all have in common is whatever prism we choose to...
Right.
So take this information and say true, false, and what does it mean to me?
So right? What are the tools of politics in that context, right?
Persuasion.
Persuasion. Maybe we agreed on the fact that we don't change minds, right? So what do? We punt. If you and I don't agree, we punt that problem while we work on something now that we can agree on. Punting is an incredible tool. It allows you to defer a conflict to a later time, right?
Let's focus on something else.
Yes, let's focus on something else. Let's focus on what we can do. Sometimes what we can do is very minimal, and that's why people get upset. And so eventually you got to move towards the big issues and try to solve them. But punting is an incredibly positive tool that is often not recognized as that.
I do that in my marriage all the time.
Oh well, there you go.
Every day, you do it with your kids, right?
Yeah, I do it with my kids. But if politicians do it, you get mad.
Well, we chase them down the hall.
The other thing I would say is that another incredible tool is reframing. Like, you know, I talked about rearranging desires, right? What does that look like? It's reframing. It's saying, look, this is not as important as you think. There's no point. You fighting over whether a woman should have a right to abortion is a ridiculous proposition. Right? That's her right. Forget it. I mean, we are not in a place where we want to control anybody, another human's body. We decided that not now, but 200 years ago.
Well, 38 miles away, they're doing something completely different.
Yeah.
Inside the Beltway.
That's what I mean, is that if that's the thing that makes things political, and that's what, you know, animates the podcast, that's what animates the idea. These things we have to focus on, otherwise we are going to get society malfunction.
And we're close there, Doc.
We're not close. We are there. I'm not even saying close now. We are there.
Well, the government is shut down as we're sitting here having coffee.
Yeah, government is shut down.
We have elected leaders who hate government.
Right.
And who hate half the population or more than half the population.
You have no idea how many elected leaders have, and even Democratic ones, by the way, have come on my show and said they hate politics. It is amazing to me. So I asked them this question. It's like, then why are you doing this? They're like, oh, no. There are parts of politics I hate and parts of politics
I like. It's the only way to change the world.
That's
why I was going to run for mayor, because I'm like, mayor's going to prison and looking out my window and seeing the city burn down and seeing Freddie Gray.
Right.
I was like, all right, well, what am I doing that's so important? And if I could get the votes, they would at least know that I'm not corrupt.
Right.
That at least I want what's best for the city.
Right. So everyone that thinks that they can do better...
They'll hate me, but they know I'm honest, just like John Harbaugh.
Everybody who thinks they can do better should damn run. That's my
take. I want to reset. I Hate Politics is the podcast. The good doctor is here. Dr. Sunil Dasgupta. I'm trying to get that straight. UMBC, Poli-Sci, has a podcast here. And, you know, so much of this is like hacking college aid, tax revenue, all this sort of thick stuff in Montgomery County and all of that stuff. You and I had the most interesting conversation where we came on the set about AI because... When I met you 2.5 years ago in Ocean City, and I've never had him on the show, and we've chatted very briefly, AI wasn't even like talked about 2.5 years ago. Like in the way that it is the last 6 months where jobs, not job losses, but sort of the come-ons on the Zuckerberg sites of there's going to be billionaires and millionaires made out of capturing AI. And then really in the last 90 days, I've learned how much of a drain AI is putting on techno bases and infrastructure and electricity and energy. I never knew about any of that, and I'm diving into it as a 57-year-old, and I pointed that to you. It's kind of like diving into the internet when it came along or diving into mobile phones or telling my son, I'm never going to text with you. Don't text me in 2004. And by the end of 2005, I'm like, you're a genius, kid, you know? The AI thing is clearly ingenious in many ways. You have an argument with whether it's really intelligence or not. And also, you being the smart guy and the doctor here, you've taken this to the nth degree to say that this is going to end humanity in some way. Or it could if it's not controlled, sort of like a monster movie, right? Like,
I don't think it's going to end humanity. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that we should not humanize AI. So when we say intelligence and we say artificial intelligence, we are giving this entire technology a human form, right? We talk about AI hallucinating. I do not like that. I call it malfunction. It's a machine. It malfunctions. I don't want to give it human qualities such that human decisions are then expected of it. That's what I am afraid of, that we will delegate because
we're letting it make decisions instead of provide information.
Correct.
All right, I'm trying to be the student here, Doc.
Well, so that's I think part of it, right? You don't want to give it the agency, the sense of agency that AI on its own, this machine.
When you start thinking it has emotions, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have emotion. It doesn't have anything. In fact, what it does, it has some negative impacts. And the most negative of all is actually true of a lot of technology, right? Which is that it increases inequality. That it allows the really resourceful, the rich, to gather up even more of the resources that are generated via that technology and leave everybody behind. So we do get this inequality effect. Now,
And weaponization.
Yeah, and weaponization, and consequently the politics of it, right? So all of that comes in at the back end of that. Again, I would go back. If you don't study humanities, if you don't study ethics, and look at the training that engineers and scientists and all of, and public health people, right?
Sure.
They don't study politics. There is, you know, there may be a course in ethics in engineering or ethics in, how you become a doctor or whatever.
But at the end of the day, you're dealing with humans.
You're dealing with humans, but you're not actually formally studying it. And that's a problem. That's a real, real problem because if you, and the expectation is that you will learn all that informally.
Right. Get that on the street.
Yeah, and get that on the street. And so some people become really good at it. Anthony Fauci, right? Really good at it. A guy who served, like, what, 6 or 7 presidents? It's amazing. He was, you know, the head of a major institution within the National Institutes of Health for decades. I mean, he's a politician. He knows politics even better than any political science professor. So
somebody, he also knows you shouldn't inject bleach.
Yes. But some people will learn that, but others will not, right? And so we have a situation where, you know, when the pandemic happened, so many local public health officials found themselves attacked on various counts. In part, I'll tell you, because they were not prepared for the backlash that politics brings when you don't include people. Right. So one of the, I don't know if you know the story, but doctors introduced a white coat, not because a white coat is more hygienic or anything. It's a sign of authority. So you want the doctor to have authority. A doctor will tell you, make sure you take your pill 2 times a day.
Right. And that's a new doctor. Right.
Right. And so you want the patient to follow that doctor. So you want to bestow on the doctor a sense of authority, and that visual, and the white coat is a visual that cements that authority. But also what ends up happening is then the doctor feels that they know everything, right? Because that authority structure then becomes calcified, and then, you know, like then they claim positions that they don't, are not prepared to defend. And so including public in science is a humanities problem. It's a very odd thing to say. And so we need to be able to do that more. They need to be trained more in politics, in psychology, in sociology. These things are important. They are absolutely what will save humanity. And whether it's AI or it's Trumpism or any one of these things that are attacks on, you know, our life. I mean, so I don't want to call AI an attack. AI is a tool. Like, it's like a knife. You can cut with it.
Call it a threat.
It's, sometimes it's a threat. A knife can be a threat sometimes.
Sure.
In the wrong hands. But it is also the thing I use to cut vegetables with and eat.
Right.
Right. So to me, I see it entirely as a tool. I don't want to humanize it. I want to treat it like a machine. That's my approach. That's what I teach my students, is that this is a tool you have. You should learn to use it just like you learn to drive a car. No more, no less. The car can get better.
That's what I'm doing. Santa Claus is going to bring me AI education for the holidays.
Oh, okay.
So I can get up to speed, have a better company here at Baltimore Positive.
Yeah.
So I can get up earlier and drink my coffee instead of being up till 3 in the morning watching World Series games.
Well, certainly you can save time using AI in certain tasks.
His podcast is called I Hate Politics. Tell me the origination of your podcast and where they can find it. And I'm already more educated for getting together with Dr. Sunil Dasgupta from UMBC, but really down on the Montgomery County campus, which I've become more educated about. So, yes.
So, I do actually, first of all, I would say I do cover a lot of Baltimore. You should listen to my interview with Jill Carter talking about the Martin O'Malley days in Baltimore. And she is scathing. She is absolutely scathing. And the context of that interview
was... everybody was getting arrested.
Everybody's getting... I mean, how many people? 750,000 off the streets. It was an incredible time. And the context of that interview, I think now 2.5, 3 years ago, was that Biden was going to appoint Martin O'Malley to be the Social Security Administration director. And what Jill Carter said at that time on the show was, if that happens, I am not voting for Biden. And I was really struck by this because I asked her, if you don't vote for Biden, and generally, if black support for Biden wanes on this account, then can Biden win? That was a question I asked in 2023, I think that was the interview. And we had this incredible interview that we did. Then this year, I did Delegate Alethea McCaskill, who was the leader in the House of Delegates in Annapolis on the reparations bill that Governor Moore vetoed. And she was not happy. So, you know, we do cover Baltimore. We do...
Democrat on Democrat aggression at this point. I have some negative things I could say about Wes Moore right now, and I'd like to, but I'm not giving oxygen, and I've known Ed Hale since I was 15 years old. I mean, I like Ed. I've been in Ed's home. Ed's been in my home. I don't know where Ed's, and I would love to have Ed on the show. Ed's been ducking me, quite frankly, literally, as is Wes Moore. But Democrat on Democrat aggression, and I had a conversation with Stuart Pittman about this, with Johnny O when he was still county executive. not a great time for that right now, right? I mean, like, and I'm not in any way bunker-minded in regard to, and I've had people here that the Democrats can do no wrong. The Democrats have made so many mistakes here over the last 15 years to open the door for this nonsense. And Gavin Newsom is speaking to that big time this week.
Right.
Just on, like, the Democrats have to get their ish together.
Right.
And that is on so many of these social issues and so many of these things that allowed this to happen, that literally fascism to take root in America and become popular amongst people who, to your point, have no education in humanities or arts or worldview or history to even know who Hitler was.
Right.
Or what he did.
No, that's right. That's right.
So, or to see how this mirrors
so
that.
So the I think, you know, 7 million Democrats did not vote in 2024. So I think to say that the Democrats are not going to have to resolve some in-house problems is not true. So they have.
Well, that is about leadership, though.
Yeah, it is about leadership. They have to work it out. Now, in Maryland, the problem is mitigated, right? Clearly, Maryland is overwhelmingly Democratic.
That's it. So yeah, but we had a two-term Republican. You know, Andy Harris is running around screwing things. So, like, it's not.
Yeah.
You would say that's balanced. That wouldn't be balanced.
It's not balanced.
And certainly Hogan doesn't have as much in common with Andy Harris as I do. I mean, and when Hogan left, the Trumpism really took over on the fringes.
That's
here.
Correct.
For Democrats like me who are of a purple heart, believe it or not, I voted for Bob Ehrlich. I'm embarrassed by that. I mean, I had him in my home. I'm even more embarrassed by that. But I have voted Republican. Bless me, Father, for I have my father would kill me because you have Herbert Hoover, a chicken in every pot. My dad had none of that. So my dad never voted for a Republican in his life. So if I sat here and said that I endorsed Bob Ehrlich over a Kennedy, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend,
right.
Who's almost as worthless as the Kennedy that's running whatever this. Dr. Kennedy, you're a real doctor. I don't know what he is.
He's a politician. He's a politician, but you know, he has made a name being anti-vaccination. So, I mean, okay, folks, if you're listening, at least get your kids vaccinated. Get yourself vaccinated.
He's made his name standing up for being anti-science.
I know.
Who makes their name standing up saying the Earth is flat? Who does this?
So, you know, because of people like him, it is very difficult to, it's part of the argument that I was making earlier that science needs a humanities element to it. It's very hard to make that. I think we come off as anti-science, but science is great. Science is wonderful.
That's why we're all here.
We are here. I mean, I take statins.
I mean, half of us have been gone from polio. The other half would have been gone from measles and smallpox.
Yeah.
Like, right?
I mean, without penicillin, where would we be?
Jonas Salk, come on, dog. You know?
Without,
that's the real doctor.
No, without penicillin, where would we be? That's what I'm saying. Science is great, right? So there's no doubt about that. I think what we do need is a little bit more, you know, return to the humanities, return to social science, trying to understand humans in a different way outside of this very narrow technological way that we understand humans in. Now, they do understand humans. They try to understand humans. There is an entire technological field called user experience. That is not, that is part of it, but it has to go more. So if you, by the way, you know what I say? If you want to hire a detective, hire an art historian. If you want to somebody to run your operations, like logistics, hire a theater kid. Nobody knows the run of show better than a theater kid. Hire a politician in your a political science major in your marketing department because, darn it, we are persuasive.
So far, so good.
Well, I mean, that's what we are trying to teach kids, right? So many of our kids are learning that. And we have to keep that. We have to keep that alive. And if we don't, then we will get society malfunction. Just like you will get AI malfunction if you don't put in the right prompts.
So he's been here 45 minutes telling me to explore the humanities. So what's the problem is? Here's where I'm going to be the jerk kid in your class.
Do it.
The 19-year-old kid and say I'm going to use AI to explore the humanities.
And more power to you. But remember, more power to you. That anything you get from AI has been written by somebody that understands humanities before.
Have a whole background.
Right. So if you want to study humanity, there's a entire, I mean.
AI's very kind, I must say. When I ask AI things, it's way more polite than most people I meet in like
Thunder. This is correct. AI will denature anger. So I actually, one time, put in an article, an angry article by an anthropologist.
And it looked to de-escalate it?
And basically, and when it gave it back to me, it has completely denatured. The anger was all gone.
I need to do that with my John Harbaugh letters. I'm going to put that through. The doctor's here, Dr. Sunil Dasgupta, and now how to pronounce his name. Where is your family originally? If you give me a little background.
I grew up in India. I came here with not much, but a letter of admission to the University of Illinois in 1995.
Champagne.
Champagne.
All right.
Yeah.
Home of REO Speedwagon.
Right. And my introduction to American culture is AM 580, WILL, which is the public radio in Illinois, in Champaign. And, you know, I used to wake up to, you know, Cokie Roberts and Bob Edwards. And that's, and you know, even today, at the end of my, I do a Wednesday noontime current affairs discussion group that is open to everybody. And I end that with saying, you know what? You've wasted a perfectly good hour after the Car Talk guys.
Did you have Paul Harvey when you were there? Paul Harvey was a national. And I had to look Paul Harvey up because he turns out he was a real conservative nut. But he's saying, now you know the rest of the story. So it's like this old, old time telling you how something works.
Yeah. And
you know how we discovered the paperclip? This is how the paperclip happened. You know, like literally, it was those kinds of stories.
Yeah. So I that was my introduction to America. The America that I came to is not the America today.
Right.
It's a very different country. The America I came to was extraordinarily optimistic. It is not so.
When did you get here? Early 80s?
1995.
95. Okay. Even later than that. Okay.
Yeah. So
you got here during the Clinton administration.
Right.
Okay.
So that was a really optimistic time. The Cold War had ended. The economy was booming.
It was incredibly optimistic for Baltimore, too.
Yeah.
You know, for
everybody.
For our lives here. Yeah.
For everybody.
9/11 kind of, you know, I mean, we talk about tectonic plates. Yeah. 9/11, COVID, Trump. You know, somewhere in there in this century, for sure. You know, all those things.
It has been dramatic these last 20 years. There is no doubt 25 years.
I don't recognize it in lots of bad ways. In lots of bad ways.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the reasons actually I decided to run for office was, even before I decided to run for office, was I was afraid, when Trump came to power for the first time, I was afraid that I'd get picked up walking the dog. Just from the street, or just I'd be walking down and somebody'd call the police and say,
"Well, that's happening every minute of every day."
Yeah,
right
now it's happening now. Yeah. But I was afraid
people
of
look
this.
Like me because I'm Venezuelan.
Right. So I was.
Were you born here? Yeah, I was born at Churchill Hospital. Throw you in a, and then what happens?
Right.
What happens then?
That's what I was
it's
afraid
insane.
Of. That's what I was afraid of in 2016. And so one of the concerted decisions I made is the way to stop anybody from any of my neighbors from calling the police on me is to know them. Literally, I got to know every neighbor, and then I, you know, went into the PTA and the this and the that, and suddenly I was like, okay, I'm going to run for school board. That's like a crazy decision to make, right?
I was going to run for mayor. Do you think anybody?
That's a crazy decision.
Yeah, I mean, Cindy's like, what? I've known you since you were 23. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. You know, well, listen, I'm gonna have you back. All right.
All right.
And at Mako, I'll show up a little. Mako's mess, man, because we're all drinking, right? We're eating. We're drinking. She's drinking me up. She gives me a free bar tab. I mean, I could cross the bridge, and she's buying me orange crushes with Deep Eddie doubles. So. Like doing the show with you down at the beach, I'm trying to get set up and all that stuff. So
you are a busy guy. You know, the first Mako, I came back with my first case of COVID. So I don't go to parties. No. I went to one of the parties and I came away with COVID. I ain't going to parties at Mako anymore. I love Mako though.
All I know is this first time it's happened to me in Mako, and I'll tell this just make you laugh. We're down in Mako. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning on the third night. Everybody's a little in the bag, and I'm sober because I don't drink like that. I'm just not a drinker. And my hair was out, like my hippie. And I'm out on this outdoor deck, and it's summer night. And this really young, pretty girl comes up to me. And I'm like, all right. She comes up to me, and she said, and this is last summer. And she's like, hey, dude, you got any weed? And I'm like, what? Like, well, of all these people here, and I looked around like that, like, that's illegal. And she's like, no, 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 it's legal. She's like 21 years old. She's like, no, it's legal. I have an elected with me who, like, literally want from some county. And I'm like, why did you come up to me? Why me? There's 1,000 people
here. It's the hair. It's the hair, Nestor.
Well, it's probably the belt buckle, too. Gave away my rock and roll belt buckle. Dr. Sunil Gadsgupta is here. I Hate Politics. Very easy to find him. UMBC, poli-sci professor, based down in Montgomery County. Made his way up here to beautiful State Fair. We're doing it all on behalf of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have a Ravens scratch-offs to give away. We will be at Coco's next Wednesday afternoon. Then Friday, we're going to be in Essex, the homeland of Pizza John's. I'm going to get some French fries with crinkle cut and some proper gravy. And I don't know if the Ravens are going to be... Wherever the Ravens are going to be, we're going to be there. We have a new Oriole manager. Luke and Alan are going to be here later. My dear friend Cindy Atkinson's going to be coming on here to talk about the first ever business card that I ever made for myself.
Wow.
It was made by her in 1992.
Wow.
When I started this odyssey of the Budweiser Sports. We weren't even the Budweiser. It was just a sports forum. They didn't even have sponsors then. The sports forum with Nasty Nestor Aparicio. You know, I was going to get a radio station. I was going to get nationally syndicated. We were going to bring the NFL back to Baltimore. We were going to win not one Super Bowl, but two Super Bowls after Camden Yards was built. And we were never going to play a playoff game at Camden Yards. So, yeah, 34 years later. So I've known her a long time. East Side, looking forward to talking to her about a big event that benefits the community up my way in the Towson area. And, Doc, appreciate you, man.
It's a pleasure.
Keep trying to make these young people smart. Tell them not to vote for Trump, all right?
I can't say that. But what I can do...
I thought you hated politics.
I don't... As I said, I don't hate politics.
The show is I Hate Politics.
The name of the show is ironic, right? It tries to capture a zeitgeist that exists in society. But I don't hate politics. I think it's absolutely ridiculous to hate politics. It's like saying I hate
water.
Breathing.
Yeah. I had a guy that told me recently he doesn't like water. He doesn't like the taste of it.
I'm like, all right.
What are you, not human? Yeah, yeah. I got Alan here later who's arguing against cheese. If you don't like cheese, that's one thing.
Yeah, but
not liking air or water.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Be good.
Yeah, how dare you talk about politics? Well, it's kind of messing our lives up. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'm out here at State Fair. I'm going to have more guests, more fun, more stories. I might even meet Cameron Crowe this week, so I'm very excited, and I'm going to get some more coffee. We're at State Fair. We are the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. This is WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking politics in Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.